Welcome back to The Takeaway. Todd Zwillick filling in for John Hockenberry today. Well, last February, Facebook shelled out, $19 billion for WhatsApp, and that instantly created 55 millionaires in Palo Alto at that tiny startup company. It was the purchase heard round the world, if you want, and even HBO took notice.
This guy's built a mediocre piece of software that might be worth something someday, and now they live here. Money flying all over Silicon Valley, but none of it ever seems to hit us.
That's the HBO series Silicon Valley, satirizing what's become a recurring story in Northern California of the tiny app that made it big. No, not big, huge. But that story has left some people in Silicon Valley and on Wall Street, the people who watch them, scratching their heads and wondering whether tech has re-entered the boom and bust era of the late 1990s. Over the last couple of days, two prominent hedge fund managers, David Einhorn and Jeff Ubin, have raised concerns about the future of Silicon Valley and even used that B word. That's right, bubble. Joining us is Josh Lerner, professor at Harvard Business School and author of The Architecture of Innovation. Hi, Josh.
Hi there.
Josh, I was reading in the Financial Times a little bit last night, and I read something interesting. I mentioned David Einhorn. Apparently, he's created a new group of stocks, startup stocks, if you will, that he calls the bubble basket, the ones that he believes are set to lose 90% of their value and thinks that maybe people should short them, bet on them to lose. What's going on?
Well, I think one thing we can say if we look at the history of venture and innovation is that it tends to go in booms and busts. And it's not just simply Silicon Valley, but if we were to go back to the invention of electricity or the canals in England, you'd see this sort of every major innovation seems to unleash a speculative frenzy, which leads to a lot of craziness in terms of outrageous valuations, high acquisition prices, public market overenthusiasm, and so forth. And I think this is probably no exception to that rule.
Part of the problem is that a lot of the companies that are doing the buying are absolutely swimming in cash. I mentioned Facebook at the top, Google. I mean, pardon me, but they have more money than they know what to do with, and that makes risk cheap.
Absolutely. And certainly we can think back to the 1990s where we saw companies with overvalued stock, at least with the benefit of hindsight, went and did a lot of very foolish things with those funds.
So what's Wall Street doing these days? I mentioned Einhorn and his bubble basket, which seems to, you know, try to be put a little bit of fear in other investors. There are people called activist hedge fund managers. Who are they and what's their role here?
Well, certainly when we think about the way that markets work, there's a lot of people telling us to buy, right? There's investment bankers who underwrite stocks. There are analysts who write analyses who tend to be rather positive in terms of their orientations. There aren't a lot of voices on the other side saying sell. And certainly one of the valuable roles that hedge funds can play is providing a voice of reason, another voice which says not everything is wonderful and let's view some of these situations with skepticism.
So the hedge funds that I always thought were kind of the go-go cash makers, the high flyers, are actually the ones stepping on the brakes here.
Well, certainly you see hedge funds with a whole bunch of different strategies, but certainly we've seen a lot of success in the last couple of years from people who have been the skeptics who have been willing to raise questions about companies and transactions.
So where is the value here? A lot of these startups are overvalued. I read that many of the companies, including Facebook, that had IPOs this year are now trading below their IPO price, which indicates inflated prices. But where do you see, where do people, I should say, where does the market see the actual value? I mean, I love WhatsApp. I use it all the time. Facebook bought it and I went, oh yeah, people love that thing.
Exactly. Well, I think that's what you're getting at is a really important point, which is that just because there is a period of overheating or speculative frenzy or bubble, whatever word you want to use, it doesn't mean that the underlying technology is something that's worthless or unimportant. And in point of fact, when you go back and look at the frenzy that surrounded the introduction of electricity, there was a lot of overvaluation of companies. There was a lot of shady companies being set up by shady people, which ended up squandering a lot of money. But that doesn't mean that electricity wasn't a revolutionary technology. And I think in the same way, if we look at the kind of technologies that are being developed today to exploit the internet in all these kinds of social interfaces, it's hard not to feel that, you know, whatever the sort of craziness in the market, the inherent promise of these technologies to change our lives in very important ways is very much there at the same time.
At the same time, Josh Lerner, you know, a lot of people seem less concerned about this potential bubble than the tech bubble of 15 years ago. You know, pets.com, remember them? They don't exist anymore. There were a whole bunch of other internet businesses. It was all the rage. And when that bubble burst, it really rippled throughout the economy. This one, not as worrisome in that way? Why is it different?
Well, I think there's a couple things which make this one different. Certainly one of them is that it's been laser focused. In other words, when you think about what happened in 1999 and 2000, you had just simply thousands and thousands of companies getting venture capital for the first time and then basically being able to go public at outrageous valuations. And when it had a very large base of retail investors who were holding shares in those publicly traded stocks. Remember, you had people dropping out of business schools to start companies. You had people dropping out of work to day trade internet stocks,
sure,
and so forth. It was very broad in terms of its spread. Here, it's much more targeted. It's essentially not everybody and their brother with a winning company. It tends to be a relatively small number of winners who are either being acquired or else in a smaller set of cases going public. It's much more narrow and laser-like in terms of its focus this time around. And as a result, if a bubble deflates, it's likely to not have as broad economic-wide impact.
So maybe mom and pop in Michigan will be okay if this bubble bursts, but maybe a couple fewer Porsches and Range Rovers and dream mansions in Palo Alto.
Absolutely. And you can think about that as sort of a two-edged sword. On the one hand, you know, you're right. If you're a luxury home builder in San Francisco, there may be a little less demand, but it also might ease some of the pressures that we're seeing in that city as well.
There's nothing more American than a boom, whether it's oil or electricity or tech. And there's nothing more American than a bust. Josh Lerner, professor at Harvard Business School and author of The Architecture of Innovation. Thank you.
Thank you.